I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It is better to leave football before football leaves me. So said David Villa this week at 37 years old as he announced his retirement, finishing his career in January with Vissel Kobe. 59 goals in 98 games for Spain.
Sorry, Luke, what is it about Barcelona players being so poetic when it comes to, like, I mean, we've had even Rakitic this week say, yeah, they've taken the ball away from me.
my uncle was quite a good Saturday player, and he stopped playing football at 30, basically because he just couldn't be bothered to do it anymore.
Right.
And I was obviously a lot younger, and I asked him why he decided to stop playing, and he said, because I wanted to do it when the fans said why, rather than the fans saying why not. So that was a tribute to my uncle Les in spite of David Villa retiring here. What kind of legacy does he leave? Where does he sit in the pantheon of great strikers, not just for Spain but in Europe?
He's up there amongst Spain's very best, and of course, I guess the name for everyone that springs to mind is Raúl. Raúl had a real struggle in the back end of his career, particularly. I think you can still make the argument that he's one of the best players of modern times never to have won the Ballon d'Or, if you want to quantify things in that sort of context. But David Villa was incredible. And I think in a way, if you're going to compare him to a modern striker and a modern striker who's played for Barcelona in a particularly glorious period, you would maybe say Thierry Henry, because I think because the time that most people saw him was not the absolute peak of his powers. He was still great for Barcelona. He still contributed heavily.
Mm.
And he was very, very important to them. You could say the same for Thierry Henry, especially in 2008, 2009, in that first Pep Guardiola season, couldn't you? But you know, that's not the absolute peak of Henry. And I think that David Villa at Barcelona is not absolutely the peak of David Villa. I think you can make an argument that he maybe stayed at Valencia a season too long, although Valencia fans would obviously dispute that.
Scored 20 or more goals in every season at Valencia.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. He was absolutely fantastic.
129 and 225 appearances for them.
Him and David Villa are a huge part of turning things round after an era in which a lot of stuff had gone wrong for them, really. Because, you know, you look at what happened to Valencia post-Benitez, and it was a mess. You know, the club nearly was nearly ruined. And he was a huge point at turning that around. He was a very, very good striker when he was at Zaragoza. And then there, he got to the point where there was no Spanish forward better than him in the league. He was comfortably the best.
Mm.
And there was so much about him, I think.
I think with Villa, there are a few things that come to mind. One is that how difficult it was for centre forwards to play for Barcelona, for Spain over the years, because they would usually have so much possession and play in the opposition half. There was so little space in behind for any strikers to kind of get space and do damage. And he was very good at that. I personally believe that the Barcelona that had Villa, Messi and Pedro up front was the best football team that I've ever seen. You know, I was still a little bit too young to kind of appreciate how good Milan were in the late 80s, early 90s. But for me, they were better and more joined up as a team than the Luis Enrique vintage, where you had MSN up front.
It was just about feeding that front three, wasn't it?
Which was all about feeding that front three.
Yeah.
And then again, you look at Villa's contribution for Spain as well, all-time top scorer. And
joint top scorer in 2010 World Cup.
Yeah, and he opened an era for them because year 2008, that was the one where they leave Raul at home, right? And first game, he scores a hat-trick in the win against a very good Russia side. And he scored big goals in the knockout stages of the 2010 World Cup as well. So someone who routinely came up big for them and was part of the Atletico team that won the league as well.
Yeah.
scored against Barcelona.
Hmm.
That's right. And, you know, just a little, I suppose, thing to finish off his career in Spain. I mean, I think you look at the different types of goals he scored as well. He was a real craftsman. And it plays into what James was saying, when he mainly succeeded under Unai Emery at Valencia. And I know a lot of fans who've been seeing clips of David Villa's favourite goals at Valencia over the last couple of days, Arsenal fans have been, I was really enjoying that clip until Unai Emery turned up punching his fists on the touchline. Can't I have 5 minutes away from him?
Yeah.
But I think that he thrived with an essentially counter-attacking side there. And then, as James says, ended up at Barcelona, a team that had possession all the time. Although he did get his share of goals on the counter there as well. I think it's quite indicative of the fact that he had a very, very wide palate.
Two good feet and a busy bastard. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, two good feet is a very good point, Luke, because one of the things that you often see with him is that he's on the left-hand side and he's kind of bringing the ball forward with his right foot, outside of his right foot, lots of little touches. And he shapes, always does this, shapes to either shoot or cut inside with his right and then ends up shooting at his left.
He had a great left foot as well.
Yeah.
I think I remember, I mean, look, I haven't spent the morning watching his clips, because my train was cancelled. But my memory of him is that he had two great feet and he just worked really, really hard. And you know he worked really, really hard because he was part of that, as you guys have touched on, that revolutionary Barcelona team. And the only thing I would add about the two iterations you've mentioned about that Barcelona team is that the first one was a revolutionary one. I mean, I had never seen football like that before. Mm. And I feel like the second one you mentioned with Messi, Suarez and Neymar kind of built on that platform was just a natural evolution of it. But the first one was unbelievable. It was, well, also, it was never seen anything like it before.
Also because I think the second one felt a bit Galactico-ish.
Yes,
in that
for sure.
You signed Neymar Neymar was coming from Brazil, but he, in some respects, it felt like he came from Brazil a little bit late, you know, given that Chelsea were very close to signing him at one stage. Then you got Suarez. We all saw what Suarez could do in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Whereas Villa, I think when he was 23, he was still only in his second season in La Liga. So late, came to La Liga late. Mm.
But on the other hand, he did feel like a sure thing when they bought him. I would say maybe the transfer market had changed by that point, as well as Barcelona's outlook and the way they did things change, because of course, as you say, by the time they got to Suarez and Neymar, they had become everything that they ridiculed Real Madrid for 10 years earlier.
Well,
they were
not only ridiculed, but been really smug and sanctimonious about as well.
Yes.
But also, how good was Pedro? I mean,
He came from nowhere, Pedro. Yeah. I mean, look, David Villa hasn't played in Europe for a few years, of course. And
did a great job in the MLS in the meantime.
He did. But he's been out of our purview. So I thought now that he's announced his retirement, it's worth giving him his dues.
Guardoni, che riceve il pallone. Evani. Parte il traversone di Evani. C'è il colpo di testa vincente stavolta da parte di Van Basten, il Milan sblocca la situazione, gol!
One player who might be coming back into our purview, and a player we haven't been able to talk about an awful lot recently either, because he's been playing over in LA at the Galaxy. Not the only person to get over to the US and conquer it.
Did you sign off with the same line?
Although we
you
didn't
can
get
go back to baseball now.
Yeah. Although we didn't get as far as LA. Is Zlatan, of course, and it's being reported that he is, and this is a great bit of American sports language, this, being recruited, quote, recruited by Milan.
Yeah.
Your friend James and colleague Tancredi Palmeri reports actually that he has been essentially signed by Milan, but that would perhaps be a misunderstanding of the
language used by Don Garber.
Yes, exactly. Exactly that.
I do love American sports language.
We all do.
Spurtability is a good one.
I'll tell you what one is. Listen, you can take the piss out of it, but I'll tell you one that's come into this studio mostly, chiefly kind of led by both you two. Clutch was never used until like 5 years ago.
The question I have for you is, was Zlatan ever tossed while he was over there?
Yeah, exactly. That could be more problematic, yeah.
So I think Don Garber may have misspoke.
What a great American name that is.
Don. Well. Yeah, I mean, anything with Don.
He definitely introduces himself with both names. Mm. Don Garber. Yeah.
So I think when he said recruited, he meant that
they're actively pursuing him, right?
Courted.
Yeah.
But I think also that is historic. Certainly this time last year, Milan were recruiting Zlatan. They then went and signed Christoph Piontek instead.
How's that worked out for them?
Well, it worked out pretty well for the first 4 months.
Yeah.
Since then, he's only scored one goal from open play. And clearly, the style that both Gianpaolo and Pioli are playing does not suit him. He's a penalty box striker. I think that's a concern for them. So, in some respects, there's a need for a centre-forward. There's a need for experience as well. Mm-hmm. But I've been told a couple of things. One, no chance.
Right.
This was before he obviously released and has decided not to stay.
Don said, just to give you his quote, just give people the full information. Don said, Zlatan is such an interesting guy. He keeps my hands and inbox full. He's thrill a minute. He's a 38-year-old guy. He's being recruited by AC Milan, one of the top clubs in the world. So
I also think politically and from a PR point of view, it's good for Don Garber to say that.
Yeah, because I was about to say exactly that.
There is this will to essentially say that top clubs in Europe with great history, great tradition, are coming to MLS, are watching MLS, and want to sign our best players.
Mm.
That I think that is what he was essentially trying to say when he made this point. I think the thing with Zlatan. So I've been told no chance. Now, since he's been released, that has slightly changed. It would have to be on Milan's terms, in terms of short-term deal, very short-term, like we're talking maybe 6 months.
At the end of the season, basically.
And certainly cheap. And the thing that discourages me from thinking that this will happen is...
Because it's Zlatan?
Is, and, yes.
And no, but a bit cheap and short-term is probably not going to work for him.
Zlatan... Zlatan loves Milan. He certainly loved his time there, loved training at Milanello, loved living in the city.
Was really pissed off when they sold him.
Really pissed off when they sold him to PSG. But the thing is, under Elliott, under Gazidis, they haven't signed a player over 25. And I think maybe they'll make an exception, but I think, again, it would have to be very much on their terms. And when you're talking about a kind of deal which would be, I'd say, 6 months with then maybe an option and, you know, low salary contract as well. So
it comes down to really what Zlatan prioritises and what he wants.
I think they're really realistic about the thing that, okay, it'll be on their terms. So short-term deal, not a lot of money, relatively speaking, and he'll have loads of offers. He'll have loads of offers. So it would have to come down to him essentially compromising.
Wanting to go there, basically. Yeah.
Can I make several leaps forward?
Yes.
And say that if...
Get Chairman Mao.
If
50 million people died, so...
If QSI were to close a deal...
KSI is involved.
Yeah.
Man, mad.
If QSI were to close a deal with Leeds...
Leeds! You're linking him to Leeds!
Well, because... Like, the fact is, there was always that talk when he was at Paris Saint-Germain. He wasn't just a great player for them. He wasn't just someone who encouraged and frightened the younger players. He was someone who they talked about becoming sporting director, global ambassador, having a job for life. He really embraced the concept. He's got a lot of close personal relationships there. If QSI were to sign a deal with Leeds... What about it? What do you reckon?
I think it would be absolutely... Listen, I think it's just one of the very, very many reasons that this network, Football Ramble Daily, is now award-nominated, because we are linking Zlatan Ibrahimovic to Leeds. And I don't care. To be honest, listen, I don't care if it's true or not. I just want to explore it in my mind.
Let's go spurious.
Yeah. That's very ATN news of you, Luke. Yeah, we're more peers.
Yeah. Get with the program.
Andy and I.
Get with the program, man. It's the future. That's true.
And if we're more sober and logical about it, like-for-like replacement for Kamal Roof. So there you go.
But does it matter if they get promoted or not? Are you saying this is happening? This is going to happen between now and...
Well, I don't know if the deal's going to be sealed or when it's going to be sealed. But say if it was sealed and they got him for the last half of this season. Can you imagine that?
That'd be amazing.
Can you imagine that?
Patrick Bamford would be gutted. Absolutely gutted beyond belief, wouldn't he?
Can Zlatan play the saxophone? That's the question.
That's what you've got to ask yourself.
Tira gol! Il Milan passa! Il Milan passa! Dopo questa interminabile sofferta sfida.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
James, I don't want to leave. I suppose we never really kind of landed in Italy there. We just sort of flirted with it. We kind of circled around it, like much like you on a Vueling flight. We kind of circled around
true,
it
true.
Before landing.
Name check them. Still a disgraceful airline.
Before we landed somewhere else, you know. So, but one person who has landed touchdown successfully in Italy and continues to be there for now is Cristiano.
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo, who apparently, depending on who you believe, he's got Schrodinger's knee. You know, so it depends. He's got a bad knee and a good knee at the same time, depending on who you ask. Who do you ask, James, and what do they tell you?
So you're bringing this up, Luke, because last Sunday when Juventus played Milan, Cristiano Ronaldo was substituted in the 55th minute.
When you do that to a man like Cristiano, and I mean, that is...
He took it well.
Is that true?
No. Shook his head.
I think it's very thoughtful of Maurizio Sarri because he does have the opportunity with that much time left in the game to beat the traffic.
Yeah, true.
And how else?
Thoughtful.
How else are you going to get to and from the Juventus Stadium other than by car?
And
frankly,
he was completely vindicated in taking him off because Ronaldo is one of the poorest players on the pitch, and his replacement Paulo Dybala comes on and wins the game with a fantastic move.
A game that they didn't always look like winning.
No, Milan played well, as they have often done, without winning at the Juventus Stadium. In fact, 9 games, 9 losses there. But Ronaldo goes straight down the tunnel and full time, Juventus celebrating, still undefeated in the league. Yeah, they're thinking, I wonder what Cristiano's got planned for us in the dressing room. Oh, he's already left.
He's left.
He left 3 minutes before the end of the game. So that has not gone down particularly well, although publicly... you have Maurizio Sarri just saying, "Oh, we should be thankful for Cristiano, you know, because Cristiano, a lot of players in his physical condition at the moment would have put their hands up and said, 'Boss, leave me out. I'm not fit. I need to rest up my knee, which you know, I've got this problem with my knee. It's impacting on other parts of my body. Just leave me out for a bit.' And instead, Cristiano's kind of grit his teeth and said, 'No, I'll be there for you, boss. I'm going to start,' which I think for Sarri is like, ah, damn." Yeah. And he's been taken off in back-to-back games. And the surprising thing, although it's not surprising because he's Cristiano Ronaldo, and even if you look at the gap in the wage bill, you know, he's earning 31 million. The next highest earner is earning 9, basic. He's an exception. And he isn't being fined for this, even though players who've been late for training in the past or have, you know, not, for example, Paulo Dybala, when he, I think this time, maybe last year, he was sent to warm up all the second half, so he thought he was getting on. And then Allegri uses his third substitute. It's not Dybala, and Dybala went straight down the dressing room. Next game, he's left out of the squad.
Right.
He's punished. And clearly with Ronaldo, there's...
Well, the plot thickens also. And I mean, obviously, it wouldn't happen on Gareth Southgate's watch, as we all know now, but the plot's thickened because... the Portuguese camp, who he's now, because Cristiano Ronaldo, for those who don't know, is now a reporter for international duty with Portugal. They are essentially saying there's nothing wrong with him.
So this is
he's going to start the first game for Portugal in this international break.
This is the curious thing, Luke, is that, and I think this is one of the reasons why Ronaldo's reacted like it is, because we all know what time of year it is. It's Ballon d'Or
Thanksgiving.
Time.
Oh, we are fans.
It's Ballon d'Or time, and Cristiano has been poor for the last month for Juventus. He did score a decisive goal against Genoa, stoppage time, won a penalty, scored the penalty, won them a key game in a very close title race.
And he really did win that penalty as well, didn't he?
Oh, yes, Andy. But he's only scored, sort of one goal from open play. I think,
one goal in the last month, I think.
Yeah. And he was poor against Torino in the derby, poor in this game. And Sarri's essentially kept this narrative going that he's been carrying a knock that he picked up in training. And Portugal are saying, oh, he's training fine. He'll be with us when we play Lithuania.
To be fair, it's probably Cristiano Ronaldo making the statement, though, given how popular yeah,
he's written it for Fernando Santos and given it to him.
Everything is fine.
But it is curious. And you wonder what Juventus think about all of this, because remember this time last year, Ronaldo decided to stay in Turin for every international break, September, October, November, so he could assimilate, so he could
took 6 months off Portugal.
And it was load management as well, if you're going to use some NBA terminology. Yeah. And instead, he's been there for every international break so far. He's certainly been very good for Portugal over the course of these qualifiers. He's what, is it 14 goals from Ali Daei?
I think he could get off them against Lithuania. Who knows?
That's clearly one of his targets now, isn't it?
And if they win against Lithuania, unless Serbia lose to Luxembourg, this will go down to the final game against Luxembourg, which, you know, it's really in the balance. I think this is all tied into the fact that he hasn't played well for some time. Even when he scored, I remember he scored against Spal, and he's missing chances that he usually puts away, certainly headers. You know, we all think of Ronaldo as a great header of the ball. He's had loads of headers, which he'd usually bury, and he hasn't buried. Juventus have looked better with Higuain and Dybala up front, and one off Bernardeschi, Ramsey, now Douglas Costa in behind.
Which is extraordinary when you think that those two strikers are trying to sell in the summer.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, this is the extraordinary thing, Andy, is football at times under Sarri has been good. It's certainly promised this vindicates the decision to move on from Allegri, particularly the game against Inter and the Derby d'Italia. But sometimes it is reminiscent of Sarri's Chelsea. In that they're only, I think, nine of their wins in all competitions have been one goal margins.
None of those home wins have really been easy, have they?
Not
even against quite modest opposition.
Yeah, aside from the Spal game, and Berisha, the goalkeeper, kept them in that for long stretches. It hasn't been easy, and I think opponents have always felt that Matthijs de Ligt will give them a hand, literally. But it's, and this is, I suppose this is the thing, that their attack is the fifth best in the league.
But they're yet to lose a game in the league,
They're yet to lose. They are, I wouldn't say grinding either, because they've just got so much talent and their bench is so superior to everyone else that they can just put Dybala and Douglas Costa on and they'll come up with the goods. But yeah, I think it's an interesting one on Ronaldo. He hasn't played well all season. And I think, aside from in the Champions League last year, knockout stages, where he scored the hat-trick against Atletico, when he scored in both games against Ajax, but they ultimately went out, I don't think he's been particularly good for them in 2019 in the league.
But it all depends on what you really expect from him, really, isn't it? I mean, I think people are only just coming out of that sort of mindset that he doesn't do anything off the ball, which clearly has been the case for a very, very long time. But I think, you know, you were talking about Higuain, and when Cristiano Ronaldo arrived, one of the things they really missed about Higuain is, like a Cavani, he works like a dog off the ball. And that's clearly going to affect the team. Now, interestingly, I think when Ronaldo goes and plays against Lithuania, it's not just because he's against Lithuania, but it looks like they're going to pair him up front with Gonzalo Paciencia, who, the son of Domingos Paciencia, great like family tradition in the Portuguese game. It's taken him a while to get where he is with Eintracht Frankfurt, and he's had a terrific start to this season. But he is someone who does that work. And that, I think, because he's a big guy who absorbs the physical contact, that really works for Ronaldo, because that takes a lot of the physical pressure off him.
Should say, Andy, that it's almost as if Ronaldo scored four in a 5-1 win against Lithuania in September.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it's almost as if he's picking the team.
Well, the game's tonight, isn't it? So people can watch it with interest. Quickly before we move on from Italy, James, can you just give us a very, very sort of sentence or two on what the hell is happening with Milan at the moment? I mean, they've changed their manager already this season. Only Spal and Brescia have lost more games in Serie A this season than them. They sit languishing in 14th. What's going on? Is it just an extension of the stuff you've talked about earlier in the season, or is there any light at the end of the tunnel for them?
So I thought they played well against Juventus on Sunday night. They were unlucky not to get something out of that game. Wojciech Szczesny, I felt, was Juventus' best player, made a superb save from Paquetá. Szczesny's had a very good season. That's another story for another day on Juventus. there are some issues there. Frank Kessie, for example, was left out of the squad. Kessie has been he was a big signing. He used to be their penalty taker until Piontek basically got that gig. They don't get any penalties anymore because, yeah, they're essentially not getting into the box enough to, as big teams usually do, to win and get those kind of situations to go for them. Piontek is a major concern. As I mentioned, only one goal from open play since the end of last season, and that was against Frosinone. I think that is one of the reasons why these briefings continue, be it from Zlatan's agent, be it from some people on the sporting side at Milan rather than the kind of business side. And it's a major concern for them that even when they play well, and they have done, they're not seeing out games. For example, Pioli's first game in charge against Lecce, they played pretty well and certainly deserved to win that game. And then senior players make silly mistakes in stoppage time, give the ball away, and they concede what was a worldie, but you drop points at Lecce. So far, their only win so far under Pioli is against Spal, who are bottom of the table. And to win that, it took a Souza free kick. And Souza was not in the starting lineup, whistled when he came on.
Oh, God.
And then scored a free kick. So things still not looking up for Milan.
Un buen sentido estar otra vez aquí en Amsterdam. Lo que pasó puede pasar a cualquier persona y bueno, miramos al futuro.
No.
Hansi Flick's Bayern.
Hansi?
Destroyed Dortmund 4-0.
Where are my detonators? Sorry, that's all I think about at this time of year when there's someone like Hans or Hansi.
Can I just... Unfortunately, that is the problem. You've hit the problem with the Classica flush on the head. Lucien Favre is the last man on the world who's going to say, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's true.
That is true.
Is he like, I'm your white knight?
Yeah, true. Jurgen Klopp would have.
But last week, I forgot. I listened to the show on Friday on the way back from the US, on the way to back to New York. Oh no, to Chicago. I can't remember. Doesn't matter. Was Kovac fired by then? Had he been fired by then?
Well, he wasn't fired in the end.
Well, you know what I mean. Was he still manager then? When you guys talked about last week?
No,
Thursday. No.
Okay, so that's been done. Good.
You clearly listened attentively.
I'm fairly certain. The thing is, I do genuinely fine without me on it. It's a bit boring. But clearly, since we last recorded an episode of this show, Bayern have released a statement or made a comment in the press or something saying that Flick is the guy that's going to be there for the foreseeable, right?
Well, that's...
Do you believe that's, and talk to me about the game as well.
Uli Hoeneß, who was overseeing his last game as president, he's going to... not go for re-election at the club's annual general meeting, which is going to happen during the international break. And this is a period of change for Bayern, not just on the bench and on the pitch, but upstairs, which arguably, in the medium and long term, or not arguably, is more important in the medium and long term. And what we are aware of already is, whereas Uli Hoeneß may not be the president anymore, he will not be missing any opportunities to stick his nose in wherever is necessary and wherever is not necessary. This is the guy, of course, who rung up German television during a live broadcast to make his feelings felt. He's someone who always has something to say. He's someone who still has that enthusiasm for Bayern. And Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who habitually sits next to him during the games, of course, in the stand, he said that when Robert Lewandowski scored the first goal in the Clásica, he said, Uli nearly knocked me down the stairs because he was celebrating so much.
Well, careful, Uli, you go back to jail with that kind of behaviour.
Uli reminds me of Silvio Berlusconi without the kind of spells as president of his country. He even, as Andy says, even when he's not going to be involved at the club, he will be a rent-a-quote, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But he was the one who first came out and said... it's clear that Hansi Flick is our plan going forward.
Right.
So obviously him and Rummenigge have diverged before on their opinions and coaches. Of course, Rummenigge wanted Tuchel while Uli Hoeneß was the great defender of Niko Kovac. And that was something that made Kovac's position more fragile as time went by. The fact that Hoeneß had an expiry date on when he was going to be president. But if it works out in the short term with Hansi Flick, well, that's great. That really suits them, because none of their preferred candidates are available right now. Erik ten Hag, of course, said he's not leaving Ajax mid-season. He didn't say he's not leaving Ajax, and he didn't say he wasn't interested in Bayern, which a lot of people have interpreted it as when he said, I'm not leaving Ajax right now.
Yeah.
I think the words right now are very, very important there.
Yeah, I remember you guys mentioning that on last week's show. Yeah,
oh, you did listen to some of it.
I told you I listened
touched.
To it.
I'm touched.
I just can't remember all of it because I'm a very busy man.
It's all jet laggy, I know.
Yeah.
So I think the chronology of it works brilliantly for Bayern. The fact that they had that game where they won quite easily against Olympiacos in the Champions League, and then they have the Clásica, which they win. Okay, like Dortmund's shortcomings, we can talk about them in a minute, and Lucien Favre's own position. But the fact is, this was a team who people who wanted to throw Niko Kovac a bone said, well, he hasn't got the players to press. He hasn't got the players to play this high-energy style. Well, they certainly played that style against Dortmund. They pressed them half to death, and that they were far more energetic, tigerish, something I talked about in the German media quite a lot, the physical side of what Bayern did, not the technical excellence, but the physical way in which they overpowered Dortmund, really.
Zero shots on goal from Dortmund.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is poor.
They had two shots, but I don't think any of them were on target.
No, and I think they came late in the game.
They even hit the post at 0-0 in the 5-0 that we did throughout the match
I was going to say, why were Dortmund so bad? We saw Jadon Sancho, who we expect to feature it for England this weekend. He was subbed off after, I think, 35 minutes.
Yeah, he was. And Lucien Favre said it had nothing to do with his physical condition. I tend to think that is not true, because he went off in the Inter game in the week, a couple of days before, 4 days before, mm-hmm. with a hamstring complaint. It was a surprise to me that he was starting in the first place. And Sancho was uncharacteristically clumsy. You know, he dribbled the ball out of play the first time he got possession.
He has been in sort of indifferent form recently, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's had his ups and downs. And I think this is something that I've talked about elsewhere, but I really truly believe that with the two best teenagers in that league, with Sancho and Havertz, the expectations we have for them at the moment are almost intolerable, and they're impossible to match. At some point, you've got to take a rest, and they've not. These are two guys who are not just players who've played well for teenagers, not just players who've played well. They are players who've run games in a very, very good league, and at some point, they need their senior colleagues to take the pressure off them. Now, I think you look at Sancho and the situation that he's in at Dortmund and the squad that Dortmund have, they should be able to take that pressure off him. And, you know, you think when he was left out of the Borussia Mönchengladbach game that they won, for example, Thorgan Hazard was able to come in and play very well. Now, Hazard, who people were initially in his first couple of weeks saying was struggling to adapt to Dortmund, well, where are those people now? Because Hazard has the most assists in the Bundesliga, more than anybody else, despite the fact that he wasn't an automatic pick straight away. So that shows you the sort of impact that he's had in recent weeks. So I think you've just got to be a bit kinder to Sancho, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people might not feel like being kind to Dortmund, because a lot of people who are watching that as neutrals will feel quite let down, just as they were by the 5-0 going back to April. And it's easy to look at the two things and say, oh, plus ça change, even though they've got in Mats Hummels, what difference has it made? Well, one goal's difference. Well, maybe two goals, because obviously Hummels scored one of the byline in the end, didn't he? But I think it brings the focus back onto Lucien Favre as a coach, because you look at the players they have there, and it's clear that, okay, there's a budgetary difference between them and Bayern, but the difficulties that Bayern have had, not just in the time under Niko Kovac, but in recent years, this Dortmund side should still have an opportunity to challenge them for the league. And one match doesn't mean they're completely out of it, especially one match in November. You'd rather this happen in November than happen in April. And I think, in a sense, the chronology of the fixtures, the way that it's at Munich first, where they do have a problem, they do have a mental problem. I mean, Stefan Ersfeld, the German journalist, was saying, in Munich, Dortmund are the new Hamburg. They kind of are. They've lost six in a row, and they've taken some mighty thrashings in that time, 5-0, 4-0, 6-0, 5-1. But I do think it goes back to Favre. We talked about this mini run that he had where they had Gladbach in the cup. They had Wolfsburg, a game that I know you pointed out and you were keen to see, where Wolfsburg was still unbeaten.
They've
had a bit of a dip since then. And then
I'll do to you. That's a kiss of death I'll put on you.
And then they had Inter, where they came back fantastically.
Yes.
I think there's a sense as well that they had to dig really deep for that, and they didn't look particularly energetic when they arrived at Bayern for this game. But the fact that it's ended in this way, it doesn't negate what happened in those three games. But, last impressions last rather than first impressions, don't they? And you go into the international break thinking, same old Dortmund. And the fact that Favre talked beforehand about, we go into this game with nothing to lose. I mean, what message does that really send to the players? I think there have been various points this season, and you could argue that Dortmund are lucky to be in the title race still, because a lot of the big teams and the teams who are expected to do well have tripped up. Bayern have tripped up, lost some points that you wouldn't have expected. Leipzig, until recently, have really struggled to get their home form going. So the question is, medium term, is Favre the guy for them? I think you still have to ask that despite those three wins recently, because this was the worst of Dortmund Favre. As James says, all the attacking players they've got, they can't get shot on target. I know it's Bayern, but come on.
The surprising thing for me, Andy, watching that, was that Dortmund's right-hand side is so strong with Sancho and Hakimi, who was brilliant against Inter in midweek. And they're going up against Kingsley Coman, who doesn't always track back, and Alphonso Davies.
Who's not a left back. Mm. But who was great.
And
next, Fabio Coentrão. Mark my words. That's a compliment, by the way.
We fully expect Dortmund to bounce back next time out at home to Paderborn. So that'll probably exorcise any demons they may have from that.
Throwing caution to the wind. Putting all your ships in one basket there.
What about Eintracht Frankfurt's David Abraham, who's now been punished? What punishment did he get for knocking over?
Well, I think he's knocking over
Manager Bay.
The body
Christian
check
strike here.
I think he's had the title of Colonel taken away from him.
Is that right?
One for the kids from the '80s. Yeah. There.
Not even I remember that. So God knows where anyone else does. He's been punished though, hasn't he? A ban and a fine, is it?
He's been banned until December 29th. So basically, he won't play again until the second half of the Bundesliga season.
So we talked about this on the show on Monday, I think it was Monday.
Yeah.
And it was, because it's quite a funny incident.
Well, it's a quite deliberate body check.
Yes.
But I did like...
But he's been punished very heavily for it.
Yeah, he has. And he should have been as well, because it was a quite deliberate act. And ultimately, he's a centre-half that is built like a wardrobe, and an oak wardrobe.
Is he captain as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deliberately,
leads by example.
Deliberately knocking over a 54-year-old man.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair point.
He's like half his size. And I did notice, afterwards, of course, you've got to get it all out on social media, but the fact that he released that statement saying, I apologise, we spoke to Strike and everything's cool. And then he had that little picture, didn't he, of him and Vincenzo Grifo, who less than an hour before basically had him by the face. And he's like, oh yeah, we're fine now. It's like, yeah, but I understand you've done your like social media housekeeping, but by the same token, you still body check the coach of the other team.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he put in the apology this stuff about, oh well, I was just trying to get the ball back. What does that have to do with anything? It has absolutely nothing to do with it. I mean, there are some people around who cover Eintracht Frankfurt and journalists who cover the Bundesliga who are saying it should have been stripped of the captaincy and stuff like that. I see where they're coming from, and I have a degree of sympathy for that view. But he was always going to get the book thrown at him, and he always should have had the book thrown at him. Interestingly, though, Eintracht are appealing against the length of the ban.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, does that cover Europa League games as well? No. Because, I mean, in total, Eintracht Frankfurt, between now and the ban finishing, because of the winter break and stuff, they play 9 games, I think, between now and then. But a couple of those are Europa League games.
They're still in the DFB Pokal, of course.
Yeah.
Having gone out in the first round last season.
They've got Leipzig, haven't they? But that doesn't start up again until February, does it?
Well, the Pokal?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay, right.
No.
And obviously, I mean, because people will be interested in, particularly Arsenal fans, if this killer El Matador is going to feature at Emirates.
Well, the thing,
he,
the
apparently
thing
he is,
of course, about that game is that Eintracht now need the points, having lost to Standard Liège in the last round at the very last minute. Mm. And they won't be bringing any fans, because, of course, Eintracht are known for their incredible support. You know, they took what, over 10,000 fans to Milan last season when they played Inter in the knockout stages. And we all remember what happened when Köln visited Arsenal. Mm. And it was absolutely fantastic. Obviously, there were some Arsenal fans who were quite traumatized by the prospect of atmosphere. But
this whole area was overtaken by Köln fans. Obviously, yeah. We record this show just down the road from the Emirates. So
yeah, but the fact is that the fans are banned. So I can't help but think that will have quite an influence on it as well.
Let's turn our attention to France then, because Andy, your beloved Lyon, their lovely bus was attacked unfairly. Always unfair when a bus is attacked.
Well, you say it was unfair. I mean, Marseille said in a statement that they released this week, we should have come in an unmarked bus.
You're right. It's your fault.
Yeah. To which Lyon responded, well, yeah, an unmarked bus might not have triple glazing, no, which we definitely needed.
Yeah. So, I mean, Lyon went down 2-1 to a Dimitri Payet-inspired Marseille. Marseille are, well, as far as I know, have been a much better team than Lyon this season. So it's not really necessarily an unexpected result. But Marseille sat in second, are they not?
Yeah, they are. But they're only 6 points ahead of Lyon even after that game. We're in 14th.
True. It's a truncated league.
Some would say, like, you know, I think this has been the story of not just Ligue 1, but the Bundesliga for the last couple of years. The fact that Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern haven't always quite hit the heights, but there's been no one good enough to take advantage. Mm. And when people talk about the lack of competition in those leagues, that has to be the concern. I think the overall standard, rather than just the fact that there's one team with greater resources that are streaking away. But I think when you're talking about the overall health of the league, a game like this is absolutely vital. A game in which, if we focus on the good bits of it, 65,000 fans in there, real fervour, the first time that Marseille have beaten Lyon in a really long time. And of course, as you say, Marseille have gone up to second. I would very much doubt they will stay there, to be perfectly honest. Mm. But there is an opportunity for them to challenge for those Champions League places simply because of the difficult starts endured by Lyon, by Monaco. Lille obviously have a big change in the squad, and also the fact that they have Champions League to
mate, I'll tell you what though, St Etienne are flying under Claude Puel, aren't they?
Yeah, they
haven't lost a game, have they?
Bear in mind that when Puel took over, they were bottom of the table. Mm. That shows you how truncated the rest of the league is. But, you know, St Etienne did win 3-2 at Nantes at the weekend, which is the most un-St Etienne and Claude Puel result that you can possibly imagine. So let's gloss over that.
Mathieu Debuchy rolling back the years. It's just great to see. James, it's great stuff.
Rolling back the years.
Exactly. Who is that again? Is that Mike and the Mechanics?
Simply Red, no?
Simply Red is Simply Red, yeah. Sorry, they're quite interchangeable.
I think you two should definitely go to the Simply Red hits tour.
I've seen Mick Hucknall live.
I interviewed him about football and reggae once.
My God, did you really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
How are we talking about this? Well, James, you mentioned before we came on about the TIFO that Marseille unveiled before the game against Lyon.
Can we call it a choreography?
Okay, yeah, I don't mind. What's the nomenclature here?
Say, wasn't Marseille's typhus great?
Right. What's the nomenclature? Explain to me why you've got a problem with that.
Well, because in Italy, and this is appropriated from Italy, you know, you talk about. In Italian, these things as a choreography or scenografia, choreografia. You don't say tifo.
Right.
You say tifosi, which is the fans, because they are so fervent. It's like they've got typhoid.
Is that where it comes from?
Yeah.
Okay.
But tifo is like sari ball. It's a social media construct. It gets on my wick.
You almost said tits then.
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say it gets on my wick. But it was a magnificent choreography, scenografia, at the Velodrome.
What was it? It was the 100th anniversary of someone.
It was. I think the birthday of the club.
Okay, right.
Can I just say it's very difficult to concentrate at the moment, where I'm trying to think of other examples in which I can grammatically offend James.
It's easily done in my experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's brilliant. It was.
How many Scudettos of Juventus won there? That's another one, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Panino.
Can I have one panini?
Can I have two paninos? Jesus Christ.
Can we talk about
No Memphis,
two,
No
two
Party?
Two cappuccinos.
Yeah, that of course,
James,
because...
No Memphis, No Party.
Because the recent scorer of a winner there where he headed in the winner, got cut head doing it. That was a very iconic image of one of these games in which Rudy Garcia never managed to beat Lyon while he was Marseille manager. Switches over and the luck changes.
Yeah, okay.
Who knew? But yeah, no Memphis. They lost Usem Awa at half time as well with a hamstring injury early in the second half, sorry, with an injury that's probably going to keep him out for a while. And he's, you know, arguably their key player. And yeah, it was tough for Lyon. Also, what sparked this war of words with the coach, the bus, sorry, and all that that's continued this week is because obviously Jean-Michel Aulas was not very happy about the conditions in which it happened. He talked about refereeing errors despite VAR. And Marseille responded to this in quite a vehement fashion because the head of the refereeing syndicate came out and said, oh, well, the penalty that was given to Marseille should never have been given because there was a handball by Morgan Sanson.
Right.
Before that the very obvious handball by Thiago Mendes. I suppose you could compare that to the way that the handball of Bernardo Silva was interpreted, the way the PGMOL talked about that after the Liverpool-Manchester City game. But yeah, Marseille came out and said, well, this really wasn't helpful for the head of the referees to come out and say this, especially when Lyon have benefited from a lot of refereeing errors beforehand. Mm. So that restoked everything. Lyon responded to that with the thing about the bus. But the main thing was, and Payet, we have to say, did an incredible job. As you said, he was fantastic in the first half. Mm. He had to wait 6 minutes to take that penalty.
One, a beauty as well, by the way. Right in the corner, beautiful penalty.
Yeah, it really was. Anthony Lopez had no chance. And I think that's the thing that's often not acknowledged with VAR. The fact that how long the takers have to wait. I mean, I saw this at the Berlin Derby where they did the double check and Sebastian Polter, who was waiting to take the penalty for Berlin, bear in mind, that was a last minute penalty.
Yeah, to give a massive game. Yeah, an unimaginably big game.
Yeah, to give them a first ever top flight win over their local rivals.
Yeah.
And he just stood there on the spot, as I was saying, on At The Match, just sort of clutching the ball while everyone else was like discussing and going crazy. He was just there on his own, kind
Talk
of cradling the ball.
Talk to the ball.
Exactly. Whereas Dimitri Payet, first they had the check on the penalty. It was obviously a penalty.
Yeah.
But also, while they were waiting to take the penalty, there was this kerfuffle on the edge of the area. And Dario Benedetto smacked Léo Dubois, the Lyon defender, round the head.
Mm.
It's the most obvious sending off you'll ever see. So they go to VAR. They have a little look at it. The referee has a look at it. Then he invites the Dubois and Benedetto over and he goes, don't do it again, lads.
Wow, God.
Sent them back. Then Payet thinks he's going to take it and a laser light starts being shone at Anthony Lopez. And Payet's just like looking up to the heavens and going, for God's sake, am I actually going to get to take this? Yeah. And then he tucks it away in that sort of style. Second goal's absolutely fantastic. And he did the Diego Simeone big balls celebration. And they were really big balls that he was miming, honestly. But
bigger than Simeone's. That's unimaginable.
But Payet, he'd spoken before the game about having had a very fractious relationship with Rudy Garcia, particularly towards the end of his time there. And normally, when you sledge a former club or coach or player in the days leading up to go, you're tempting fate. Mm. You know, you've really got to deliver. And he did exactly that. So he did an absolutely fantastic job. And in their last two games, Marseille have beaten Lyon and Lille, who are two of their biggest rivals. It's not always been the prettiest football, but they've really dug in and people are starting to look at André Villas-Boas and going, you know, maybe there's some substance.
I was about to say, and that was going to be my final point in the matter, that if André Villas-Boas carries on like this, I mean, guiding Marseille,
he'll get the Chelsea job
up to second with a negative one goal difference. That's the kind of thing that attracts the attention of big Premier League clubs, James.
Well, you know, he has actually made one really big tactical switch, and that's the Boubacar Camara, 19-year-old, who you would say is their best defender. He's switched to 4-3-3 and he's put Boubacar Camara in midfield as a holding player, which is not his position. And also, it bumps Kevin Strootman, who's the highest earner in the squad, from the team. So to show that, to do something like that, if that doesn't go well, you look an idiot. It's a really, really big statement to do that. And it's worked out for them so far. So excellent.
And Ian Ashton told me he is an idiot, so.
What a way to end that.
Some serious shade.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.